Welcome back to the clubhouse here in the McAdoo studios. Kyle Bailey still joined by Chris Coleman and Will Stewart of TechSideline.com. Follow them on Twitter at Chris Coleman TSL and at Will Stewart TSL. Beer and football, very American combination, and it might be soon coming to a college football stadium near you. Texas is going to do it after they've been selling it at Olympic sports and basketball
games. Yeah, they've been trying it out at other
they
sports.
Have. It was sort of a beta test run. West Virginia is doing it.
Since 2011.
And
Maryland's going to start this fall.
Maryland's going to start this fall. I think West Virginia was making roughly $700,000 extra in profit from those beer sales in the stadium. Everyone keeps asking me, and we brought this up a couple of times over the course of the past year or so, and I can't tell you how many people have asked me, hey, when do you think they're going to start selling beer at Lane Stadium? And I'm like, well, I don't know. I couldn't drink any there if I wanted to because I'm working, so it doesn't really matter to me. But I'm like, I don't know. I think with the new regime, I believe it's probably very much on the table and being discussed if it's not already been thoroughly researched. And I think it happens eventually in Blacksburg. How long is anyone's guess? Thoughts?
So here are the stats. In 2008, only six universities had been were selling beer at football games. So in 2008, six of them. 7 years later, there are 23. So they've added 17 schools have started selling beer at football games just in the last 7 years. Of those 23, only six of them will be Power Five schools. So at this point, it's mostly the schools from the smaller conferences. But I think it's funny. If you go back 10 years ago, it was kind of unthinkable to sell beer at a college football game. And now people are talking about it and doing it. And so we ask people on Tech Sideline, we like to do a poll every week, and we like to pick hot topics like, what would you think of Rich Rod as your next head football coach and that sort of thing. So we asked, what do you think about selling the beer in Lane Stadium? And 51% of the respondents said no, and 39% said yes, and then the other, what does that leave, another 10% or so, were, not sure. And it might depend upon how it was implemented and all that sort of thing.
Sure what it would hurt, honestly. I think the more I think about it, I'm like, because I've said for a long time that I don't have much desire to travel to NFL stadiums anymore. And those especially in certain places because of the outbreak of violence in a lot of these places, the fighting. And I mean, I was up in New England for the Baltimore Ravens game. I've told this story several times. And I mean, it's just a different atmosphere. It's exciting. It's fun. It's football. But there's a different feel than the college game. So maybe on one hand, I want that to be preserved, but on the other hand, I see so many people stumbling into Lane Stadium and everywhere else on Saturdays, sneaking in airplane bottles in their socks and their hats, and I just don't know what would change. I know me personally, if I was going to a game as a fan, and I would still try to do that occasionally, it's not going to excite me that I think, oh man, yes, I get to buy a $9 beer now at my seat. I mean, and that's if you get to buy it at your seat. I mean, you have to walk down to the concession stand and miss the game to stand there and wait on a beer, which does not excite me at all.
Here's why I wouldn't do it. If people are in line getting beer, they aren't in the stands yelling.
And make a noise and play.
And make a noise. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. If they're bringing in airplane bottles and you're turning your head when they're bringing in airplane bottles and letting them go ahead and do it and then just cleaning up after them after the game, uh-huh, then they're in the stands making noise.
Right.
I'd say just let them keep bringing in airplane bottles and just don't heavily enforce that.
Yeah.
And now if they choose to sell beer in the stadium, it'll be all about the money.
Can you send, like, the guys walking around with the guys and the girls with the things walking around, up and down the stairs with the drinks?
You could,
but I guess, I don't know if there's a rule against
that.
Well,
then you can only hire people who are older than 21.
That's true.
And do you have to hire more people to walk up and down the aisles, or you just take away some of the Coke people and give them beer?
That because also, when it gets hot,
you could just lead to more cluster in the aisles if you have to add more people.
And a slightly less cold Coke is one thing, but a slightly less cold beer is something altogether different.
Yeah, right? Absolutely.
You know what I mean? That's, and if you're a beer drinker, you know that. Like, I don't drink a ton of beer these days, but if I've got a Coke that's, it's just cold enough, all right, that's fine.
Sure.
I can deal with that. But if I've got a beer that's not as cold as it should be, I'm not paying $9 for it.
You don't want a lukewarm beer.
No.
And they carry the Cokes around and they have ice in them. You carry the beers around, they're going to start warming up pretty quick. So it becomes this, for the people that want to buy the beer, it becomes this parade up and down the aisle to go stand in line, and it's another distraction, and it's another reason they're not watching the game.
It would have to be bottled beer in in you know, a thing of ice, in a tub of ice, basically, that you're carrying.
Yeah, that would be really tough to carry around.
So I'm not for it, to be honest with you.
I think there's just there's so much logistically that goes wrong there, right? Yeah. I mean, I mean some of the stuff I'd thought about, others that I didn't, but I mean, like, man.
But having said that, there are people already doing it, so you just go talk to them and say, what's the best way to do it? Mm-hmm. So the logistics can be worked out.
That's it. Well, even if it's imperfect, the fact of the matter is West Virginia brought in an extra $700,000 in revenue, and, you know, Whit Babcock came on the show several months back, and we were talking about the cost of attendance increase, and he said, it's going to cost us between $800,000 and $900,000. Well, there's your gap. You know, there's a lot of your gap closed there.
Well, your gap will also be closed when Jim Weaver and James Johnson and Seth Greenberg also come off the payroll.
Aren't receiving paychecks.
Well, what's the deal with Johnson's contract now that he's the new director of ops at Miami?
I think we would owe him the remainder of what they're not paying him.
May only be a coaching position. It may not matter that he's an ops guy. Tech may still be paying him the full amount.
And even if this is still considered a coaching position, if he's making $75,000 a year, we would still owe him the remainder.
Yeah, which
is the difference.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
to give a little background in case some in your listening audience haven't heard it, James Johnson was hired by the University of Miami to be their director of basketball operations.
Yeah, we talked about it a bit last week. And good for him. I'm a big James Johnson fan. Like the guy a lot. Been glad to see he's back in the game. But that might have been very strategic. You're right. I mean, I don't know the language in the contract, but it could have been only for a coaching position, in which case, you know, he's earning a salary there and getting paid still from
Virginia Tech. Yeah, and he's got two more years, too. I think his severance isn't right. I can't find the word I'm looking for.
Buyout.
His buyout. He's going to get paid for 3 years, and he's been through one of those years.
Yeah. So. Everybody loving on the dog over there?
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. Everyone hears him throughout the course of the show. No matter, I tell him to lay down, and he's walking around the studio shaking. He's got a bunch of charms on his necklace there.
Yeah, so
he makes a lot of noise. Kyle Bailey, Will Stewart, Chris Coleman of TechSideline.com. Any basketball news at the moment? It's downtime for Buzz Williams and company too. I know what's he got going on right now? The Beachbody Buzz workout thing going on. I saw him tweeting something about it.
Yeah, you know, he tweets about a lot of things. You can't really keep up with it all, but
tweet a lot.
Yeah, the current team is going through off-season conditioning and things like that, and they're doing a Get Better Award each week, and there's a different winner each week. And I know Johnny Hamilton has won it. Blackshear has won it. I think maybe Ahmed Hill won it 1 week. I don't remember, but for the most part, right now the biggest things is it's the evaluation period, or and you can offer guys, because you've got all these events in April and over the summer, and you can go out and see 2016, 2017, 2018 recruits play. So Virginia Tech's put out a ton of offers over the last couple weeks. Don't ask me any names because I haven't completely researched it yet or anything like that, but. I think and most of the offers have gone out to, you know, like 2017 kids, which is 2 years from now, or they'll be signing in about a year and a half or something like that. But as far as the 2016 class goes, Virginia Tech will have one open scholarship, and that'll be Shane Henry's. But you always expect attrition. So, I could see Tech taking two or three guys in this upcoming class. You know, I think that's always fluid. I think you go through the season and see how guys are playing and things like that. I mean, this past year, we didn't know that this would be a five-man class. We thought it was going to be a three-man class, you know, in November. But it ended up being a five-man class. It is what it is. There's always going to be attrition in your program. And, you know, I think they'll target a point guard and a big in this coming class.
I think it's incredible that he's going to have 13 guys this year. You know,
right.
There may be some injuries that occur between now and then. I don't remember the last time Virginia Tech had 13 guys, and you can look at all 13 and see all 13 of them play in some minutes. Mm-hmm. You know, it's VT doesn't usually have 13 guys, 13 scholarship players on the roster, and if they have 11 or 12, then you can look at two or three and like, yeah, he's not going to play much. But Buzz has got a full cupboard to work with next year. A lot of them are still young, but that's amazing. That's very cool.
Yeah, normally we have about 10 scholarship players, and two of them break their fifth metatarsal, and then we're down to eight guys.
That's tradition.
And then we're practicing the team trainers against them, you know. But now we're going to be able to, you know, even if three guys got hurt, You could still run a full 5-on-5 practice situation
scholarship
players.
What a luxury.
I don't think that's ever been done around here.
No.
I don't remember the last time it was. Well, Ricky Stokes years ago had 14 guys on the roster. One of them was playing as a walk-on. But
That was the old 8-5 rule. You were never allowed to bring in more than 5 guys in one class or 8 guys over 2 classes. So he got one of his guys, and I think it was either Alan Callaway or Philip McCandy's, to walk on and got a Pell Grant or whatever for that first year. So really he had 14 scholarship players on the roster. Not that it did us any good.
So how much more time have we got? We got a minute or so?
Yeah, you got 2 minutes. What you got?
Because back then, you know, Berman was covering the team back then, too. And he asked Ricky, he said, so who's your guy who's not on scholarship? And Ricky said, I'm not telling you. So Berman, man, he put in some work. He started calling players, families, and coaches. He did a ton of research to find out who the guy was that wasn't on scholarship.
Of course he did.
I remember it was this huge article in the Roanoke Times with all these quotes from all these family members and all this stuff. And that wasn't well received, but, you know, Berman acted like a reporter. He wanted the answer to something, so he went and got it.
That guy is the best and the worst.
All rolled up in the one.
And I would tell him that to his face. Everyone that knows me knows I would. He's the best and the worst all at the same time.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it, actually. Very good way to put it.
He's just, I mean, I don't know. I mean,
if I was a coach, I would hate
him. I'll hate his guts.
Yeah.
No, he made a lot of people mad with that.
Of course he did. You know, Coach K wants to kill him, and Coach K doesn't want to kill anybody. You know, that night, the exchange with he and Babcock, you know, after the game buzz was taking a while to get in.
I missed that. I wish I'd been there.
Oh, I was sitting 5 feet from it, and I almost blew snot bubbles out of my nose. I mean, because Whit Babcock is like literally the nicest man alive in public.
Plays everything close to the vest.
Yeah.
Shows no emotion.
I mean, just calm, cool, collected demeanor, just so friendly and congenial to everyone, even the guys that he seemingly doesn't like. And Berman just managed to get under his skin that night. It was too good. That's Mark Berman for you. And he's just, we could do this all day. All right, we're out of time. Gentlemen, it was fun. That ended on a good note. We'll see you next week.
All right.
All right.
Chris Coleman, Will Stewart, TechSideline.com. Follow them on Twitter at Chris Coleman TSL and at Will Stewart TSL. We'll take a break. We'll come back and wrap up the show on a Friday. Keep it locked to Super Sports 101.7.